All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf, we have a beautiful daf ahead of us. Today's daf is daf Ches. We are picking up from Zayin Amud Beis, three lines up from the bottom. So first of all, our shir is dedicated by Ira and Miriam Grossman. Ira unfortunately lost his mother over Shabbos. The Levaya is today, so we dedicate our learning. The Ilui Nishmas, Ira's mother, Freda Bas Shmuel, as well as in the Zchus of the Neshama for Eliezer Ben Kolonimus. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas have an Aliyah, and the families are Nechama. So we'll say, so let's begin. So lo sakiru panim b'mishpat. So three lines up from the bottom. Literally, you shall not recognize a face in judgment. So what does this mean? So the Torah is teaching us that one is not supposed to favor one of the litigants over the other in delivering judgment. Rabbi Huda Omer, lo sakirehu. Rabbi Huda says, if you look at Rashi, second line up from the bottom, lo sakirehu, imhu ohavecha. If one of the litigants happens to be someone who is a friend of yours, then ultimately, again, do not favor him in judgment. Rabbi Elazar Omer, lo sinachrehu. Rabbi Elazar says, literally, not lo sakirehu, but lo sinachrehu, which means don't estrange him. What does that mean? Look at Rashi, again, lo sinachrehu, imhu son acha, even if he's someone, again, whom you dislike immensely, do not go ahead and make him, do not go ahead and take out that anger or that animosity upon him when passing judgment. So we'll say, so two different drushas, but the same idea. Lo sakiru ponim b'mishpat, either don't favor or don't put at a disadvantage. But the idea being that the Torah is teaching us that one has to go ahead and give each of the litigants equal footing when they come before you for judgment. So the Gemara goes weiter. Ushbezichni d'Rav is actually an interesting case. So Ushbezichni d'Rav means literally the host of Rav. In other words, one time Rav stayed somewhere. So his host, Ushbezichni d'Rav, Asala Kamela Dino, came before Rav for din. So the Gemara says, Amarlo, Lav Ushbezichni at? So the litigant says to Rav, do you not remember that time you stayed by me? In other words, if you look at Rashi, he says, I'm just saying, don't you remember that time that you stayed by me and I did you that incredible chesed I took you in? Amarlo in. Rav says, yes, of course I remember. Amarle dina isli. So the man said, oh, by the way, now that you remember that, I happen to have a din Torah that I would appreciate your help with. Amarle, to which Rav responded, Tap of Ches, Pasulna the Chaladina. Rav said, I'm sorry, I cannot go ahead and paskin halacha for you. Rashi says, where Pasulna the Chal? She's Kartani Tovasecha. Now that you brought up that nice favor, that nice Tova that I did for you, I cannot adjudicate your case. Amrali Rav Rav Kana, Pok Dainig. So Rav said to Rav Kana, listen, Rav recuses himself from this particular din Torah, and he says to Rav Kahana, do you mind, would you mind adjudicating this case? Chazyeh dehavaka goyis bey. So Rav Kahana noticed that this litigant, this guy, was acting in a very gaivadika manner. Why? Because this guy felt that he kind of had this in the bag, you know, meaning he felt, here he is, he's Rav's buddy, right? He's Rav's buddy, he's now gone ahead and given over this, Rav has now delegated this responsibility to Rav Kahana. But the guy feels that, like, it's clear Rav Kahana is going to paskin in his favor because he's Rav's friend. See, he was conducting, Rav Kahana felt that he was conducting, that this man was conducting himself in a gaivadika way. Amarle, it's saisa. If you're going to listen to me, then you'll listen to me. V'ilo, but if you're not going to listen to me, mafikna lecha rav me'oncha. I will remove Rav's ability to help you in any way. What does that mean? Look at Rashi, second line, about said from the top, last one of the line, mafikna lecha rav me'oncha. Odi'acha, I will tell you, she'en rav yachal l'sayecha. Rav, I will do something to you that Rav will not be able to help you. De shamtina lecha. I'll put you in shant. I'll excommunicate you. So again, if you think that you can act like a bangaiva, because one time you hosted Rav, and you think, therefore, again, I'm going to paskin in your favor, let me be clear. If I have to excommunicate you, and therefore remove Rav's ability to help you in any way, I will do so. Bimar goes weiter. Ki katon ki gadol tishmon. So remember, the pasuk says, the first part of the pasuk is lo sakiru panim b'mishpat. So we'll say, remember, we're just darshaning this pasuk in its entirety. First, do not recognize someone. Do not give, literally, do not favor someone when delivering din. And then the pasuk goes on, kakaton kagadol tishmon. What does that mean? Literally, like the katan, like the gadol, you shall listen. Amrei Shlakish, Sheikhaviv Alecha Din Shalpruta, Kedin Shalmeya. Sheikhaviv said it teaches you that a din, right? Literally a judgment concerning a pruta, should be literally just as important upon you as a din of 100 mana. In other words, pruta obviously is a very small amount, 100 mana, very significant mass. In other words, what does that mean? Amai Hilchasa. If you want to tell me that what it means is that a person, the judge, has to investigate the claim before delivering a verdict. In other words, whether the din is on a pruta, whether the din is on mea mana. So if you tell me the judge can't just rush the judgment, he has to investigate the claim. Pshita. Well, so it's obvious. The judge has to go ahead and we've already saw in yesterday's daf, deliberate on every psak din before it's delivered. Ella. Lak dume. Rather, we'll say what it means is the following. Look at Rashi, last of the wide lines on top. Lak dume. In balef anecha din shalpruta v'chazur ubad din acher shamana hakodem lefanecha hektein lachtoch. The idea we'll say is that a judge is obligated to go ahead and adjudicate the cases in the order which they come in. So, for example, let's say a dayan has first in the docket a din Torah regarding a pruta, and then a few minutes later another din Torah comes in for 100 mana, which is a much more high profile case. You have to adjudicate the cases as they come in. Both say we will see that under normal circumstances a dayan is not permitted to go ahead and change the order of the way the cases came in the docket. We're going to see there is one exception to this. An exception to this is if the melech comes for din. If the king comes for din, so the halacha is part of Kavod Malchus, is the king doesn't wait. The king's case. But leaving aside the king, you judge the cases as they come in, even if, quote, one is more high profile than the next. Lo saguru mipnei ish. Do not go ahead and be afraid of any man. So the Gemara says, Amram Chanan, atachnis devarecha mipnei ish. So we already learned this before. Literally, do not withhold your words in front of another person. Which I will say, we dashed already to mean that what? That even if a Talmud is sitting before his Rebbe, and the Rebbe is delivering a psak halacha, the Talmud feels that the Rebbe is mistaken, the Talmud should speak up in order not to create a skewing of justice. Kamishpat lelokimhu. Because mishpat ultimately belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Judgment belongs to God. What does that mean? Amar Abchama Rabbi Chanina, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo dayim l'rashayim shenot len mizem amon, v'nos len lozeh shelo kidin. But this is a very profound Gemara. It's not enough, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's not bad enough that the rashayim, the wicked, take money from this one and give to this one illegally. Ela, but rather, again, they're matriach me. They cause me the exertion of having to return the money ultimately to the original owner. So what does this mean? So when a person commits an aveira, they disrupt universal equilibrium. Then it becomes HaKadosh Baruch Hu's responsibility, so to speak, to restore universal equilibrium. So if I steal money from Reuven and give it to Shimon, so if that money really belonged to Reuven, the Ribbono Shel Olam has to restore equilibrium and get that money back to Shimon. So it's not only bad enough that the individual, the ganef, takes money from one and gives it to the other, but they're matriach, so to speak. They cause HaKadosh Baruch Hu additional exertion by having to restore that equilibrium. Okay. V'adav asher yikshe mikem. So the pasuk says again, and that which is difficult for you. Takriven olai ushmatev. So remember again, this is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking, and Moshe Rabbeinu talking about the system of dayonim that was created, and the idea being that at first the cases should be adjudicated by quote unquote lower level dayonim, and anything that cannot be accomplished or cannot be adjudicated on the lower levels, Moshe Rabbeinu says you can bring to me, and I'll go ahead and take care of it. Rabbi Chanina, v'itim Rabbi Yoshia, avdavar ze ne'enash Moshe. For this statement, Moshe Rabbeinu was punished. I'm about to say, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do wrong? Take a look at Rashi. Al davar zeh, shenatol sror li atzmo, lomar takrivon elai, shahilo lomar takrivon lifnei hashchina. Moshe Rabbeinu says, v'adavar sheyikshem kem, anything that's difficult for you, bring to me. So Chazal feels, Gemara feels, that was a statement of gaiva. It was arrogant. Moshe Rabbeinu should have said, anything that's difficult for you, we'll bring before the Shechina. You'll bring before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's just takrivon olai. So because he made that statement of gaiva, Moshe Rabbeinu was punished. What happened to Moshe Rabbeinu? What was the punishment? Shnei Mar, Vayakrev Moshe's Mishpatan, Lifnei Hashem. the old Tamar, also it's the past week's parasha, that the pasuk says that old Tamar, actually, yeah, the past week's parasha, that Moshe Rabbeinu brought their mishpat b'nos tzlafchad. Moshe Rabbeinu brought their mishpat before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, that there was this episode that came up with b'nos tzlafchad. Remember, again, father dies, leaving behind no sons. Moshe, they come to Moshe Rabbeinu, what's the story with the Nachla? What's the story with the inheritance? Moshe Rabbeinu does not know the answer, has to bring it before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara is saying over here that Moshe Rabbeinu made a statement of Gaiva, which indicated that he had the answers. His punishment was that a case came before him for which he did not have the answers, and it had to be brought before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maskev Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, so Rav Nachman is the Kasha, Miksiv Vashmiachem. So Nachman Bar Yitzchok will say, kind of argues on behalf of Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, does Moshe Rabbeinu say Vashmiachem? Does Moshe Rabbeinu say, bring the case before me, and I will make heard the psak halacha? In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu is not saying that bringing it to me, I'll tell you the answer. Ushmativ. Ushmativ, Rabbosei, means, Ushmativ means, I'll listen to it. I'll listen to it means, I'll hear what you have to say, and together we'll investigate what the answer is. In other words, had Moshe Rabbeinu said, V'chol adavar, v'adavar sheyikshe mikem, v'ash, tavu, taviu, takrivun ala, Takrivun alai v'ashmiachem would mean bring to me and I will make known to you the answer. But that's not what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Moshe Rabbeinu says, whatever is difficult for you, bring to me ushmativ, and I'll listen. I'll listen. I don't know if I'll have the answer, but I'll listen. We'll try to figure it out together. So the Gemara says the following: v'i ushmativ I gamirna gamirna. If I know the answer, I'll give you the answer. V'i lo azilna v'gamirna. If I don't know the answer, I will go and I'll ask Kadosh Baruch Hu and I'll learn the answer. So we'll say, so therefore again, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok fundamentally disagrees with the first approach and feels that Moshe Rabbeinu's statement was not a statement of Gaiva. If Moshe Rabbeinu's statement was not a statement of Gaiva, then why is it that he did not know the answer to B'nos Tzlafchad's question? In other words, seemingly, the Gemara seems to feel that the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did not know the answer to B'nos Tzlafchad's question seems to indicate that something's up over here. Something's a bit different. So what's the pshat? So the Gemara says the following: Elokei Desanyo, Ru'uya Parshas Nachlos Shetikasev Aidei Moshe Rabbeinu. In reality, the entire parasha of Nachlos, the laws of inheritance, should have been proactively written by Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, we're both saying that it shouldn't have been that it was the episode of Tzlafchad that triggered the need to learn these halachos concerning inheritance. Rather, this parasha of the Torah should have been written by Moshe Rabbeinu proactively, much in the same way that most of the Torah is given over by Moshe Rabbeinu proactively. Ela, shezachu b'no Tzlafchad, v'nichtav al yodan. Rather, again, B'nos Tzlafchad merited that this section of inheritance be written through them. So therefore, I will say, ultimately, again, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know the answer to the question of Nachla, B'nos Tzlafchad, was not a sign of Moshe Rabbeinu having too much gaiva when it came to his knowing of judgment. But rather, again, it was a schus for B'nos Tzlafchad that because, again, like Rashi brings out in the passage, because of the Chibas Haaretz, because of the Eretz Yisrael, they were privileged to have the parsha of Nachla written through their question. Similarly, Ru'uya Haisa Parshas Mekoshesh, Shetikasev Aidei Moshe Rabbeinu. Similarly, again, the episode of the Mekoshesh. Remember, again, the Mekoshesh was the individual who gathered wood on Shabbos. He publicly desecrated Shabbos. So remember, again, after his act of Chol Shabbos, so the Torah says that Moshe Rabbeinu did not know what to do with him. Why did this happen this way? So really, the halachos concerning Chol Shabbos should have been proactively given over through Moshe Rabbeinu. So why is it that it was reactively given through the episode of the Mekoshesh? Ela, sheneschayiv Mekoshesh, v'nichtava al yado. Rather, again, it was because that the Mekoshesh was found to be liable and culpable. Therefore, again, the halachos of Chol Shabbos were given through him. What's the principle that the Torah is teaching us? Landecha, shemagalgalin chova al yidei chayiv, uzuchus al yidei zakai. We'll say to teach us a very important lesson, that the Ribbono Shel Olam brings about good things through good people and negative things through bad people. The idea being, I will say, that ultimately, again, not only is there a level of responsibility for what it is that we do directly, but there's a certain level of responsibility for that which occurs through us even indirectly as well. So when good things happen through me, that's a sign of divine pleasure. When bad things happen through me, that's a sign of divine displeasure as well. Finally, Mar goes by to Ksiv. Pasuk says, "Vatzaves shoftechem ba'isahi." So the pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu says, "I commanded your judges at that time." Uksiv, and the next pasuk says, "Vatzaves eschem ba'isahi." I commanded you at that time. Now, Bosi, look at Rashi for just a moment. Ksiv vatzaves shoftechem, mashmos chachameihem hisya lahadrich tzibor b'mishpat v'achukim al karcham. Uksiv vatzaves eschem. The tzibur atzmam is here, umahutrach lasir. So we'll say, what the Gemara's contrasting order is the following. In the first pasuk, it seems to indicate that the shoftim are being charged with the authority to lead the people. In the second pasuk, it seems to be everyone's being commanded together. So which one is it? We'll say, this is actually amazing. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Smaloi. Asar letzibur, shetehe imas dayon aleihem. So we'll say, when it says, va'atzave eschem ba'isahi, that's teaching us that the tzibur is obligated to have respect and reverence for the dayon, va'ashara ledayon sheyispal es hatzibur, and it's the obligation upon the dayon to be patient with the tzibur. So it says an incredible yisod. In other words, in order for the judicial system to work, there has to be a mutual respect. Really a mutual reverence, right? The tzibur has to respect the dayanim, and the dayanim have to know how to tolerate the people. What does it mean to tolerate the people? We'll say, so again, we don't need much Rashi on this. We understand that sometimes people can be exceptionally difficult, especially when it comes to Dine Torah, when it comes to Machlokes. So the dayan has to have the patience to be able to deal with all kinds of people. So you might as well say, listen to this, Shaila. Ad kama. How much patience does a dayan have to have? The boss said, I understand it's not just dayan, and we're going to see that this is going to be important in a leadership context as well. How much patience does a leader have to have for the tzibor? Am Rab Chanan Vitim Rab Shapsi, Kasher Yisa Ha'omen Esayonik. A leader has to have as much patience for the tzibor like a mother has for her nursing child. The same way that as many times as the child cries and wants to eat, the mother never says, enough already, right? Enough already, you just ate, what's the problem, right? But the mother is there for the child no matter what it is that the child wants. So the patience that a leader, that a dayan has to have for the tzibur abosai is that same level of patience. Just like a mother carrying around the nursing child. Ksiv, incredible Gemara. Ksiv, kiato savo, uksiv kiato savi. So I'll say, Slimar, it's another contrast of Sukkim. So this is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to Yoshua. The first time the pasuk says, Ki ato savo esa'am. So we'll say, if you look at Rashi says, Ato savo esa'am mashma gam ato ke'echal mehem. So we'll say, ato savo esa'am means, you will come with the nation. So in other words, the Moshe Rabbeinu is grouping Yoshua together with the people, and then it says, Ki ata savi, you will bring the people. Which Rabbeinu indicates that what? Yoshua is the leader, the people are the followers. So, which one is it? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar LaMoshe LiYoshua, Moshe said to Yoshua, Ata vaskinim shevedori moem. So let's listen to this. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, Moshe says to Yoshua, listen, the best way, the best thing you could do is lead together with the Zikanim. Lead together with the Zikanim. Create a leadership model of collaboration. There's you, there's the Zikanim. For the Kitrashi, Rashi says, Moshe Amar Lo Zikanim Shabadori Moem, Apim Asim Aisem, Lo Tistara Aleihem, to ultimately, again, collaborate with them and do not go ahead and try to rule over them. So the Gemara says, Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Rosh Hashem disagrees with Moshe and says, Tom Makel Vahach Al Kad Kadam. Go ahead and take a staff and hit the elders, hit the Zikanim over the head. Now, what does that mean? Daber echad ledar, ve'ein shnei dabarin ledar. There's one, literally one, daber is a spokesman. There's one spokesman for the generation. There are not two spokesmen for the generation. So we'll say, what you see over here, by the way, is a fascinating discussion about apparently a machlokas between Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in leadership models. Moshe Rabbeinu was advocating for Yoshua to engage in a more collaborative leadership model. collaborate with the Zakenim, right? Lead together, and together you, and listen, Yoshua, you're young, the Zakenim are more seasoned, you'll take their advice, you'll lead together. Don't try to assert yourself over the Zakenim, but rather partner with the Zakenim. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, no, there's one leader, and Yoshua, what you need to do is you need to assert your authority over them from the beginning. Now, does Kadosh Baruch Hu mean to tell Yoshua that he shouldn't listen to the Zakenim, that he shouldn't take advice? Of course not. But what he's saying is you're not their partner, you're their leader. And if you don't establish yourself as the leader who's open to advice, the leader who's open to hadracha, the leader who's open to ideas, to suggestions, but at the end of the day, daber echad lador, there is one leader of the generation, there's one spokesman, there's one mouthpiece, everyone else can offer their advice, but one person has to move the agenda forward. So incredible, machlok, it's in Moshe Rabbeinu and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Good, Gemara goes weiter. Tana, so we'll say, the Gemara switches gears a little bit. Zimun b'shlosha. So the Gemara says, Zimun is done with three people. My Zimun, what does that mean? What do you think about Zimun is with three people? Ile ma birkas Zimun, if you want to say, we'll say that, it means like benching. Vatanya, Zimun u'birkas Zimun b'shlosha. The Sebraisa says that Zimun and Birchas Zimun are both done with three. That indicates to us that what? That Zimun and Birchas Zimun are what? Two different things. So the Gemara says, maybe you'll say that in fact it's one thing, but the Braisa is just coming to explain itself. My Zimun, what does Zimun mean? Birchas Zimun. That can't be Vatan, we learned in the Braisa. Zimun b'shlosha. Birchas Zimun b'shlosha. So we'll say this price is even more explicit. It's clearly breaking this up into two different things. Zimun is done with three. Birchas Zimun is done with three. So the Gemara says, Ela mai Zimun. So what does Zimun mean? Azmune ledin. Oh, both say what it means is a hazmana to Beis Din. That summoning someone to Beis Din has to be done through the three Dayanim. Ki hadam Rava. Both say this is in accordance with what Rava said. So the Gemara says, Ki hadam Rava, Hani Beit Lasa Daini, Diyasva Va'azil Shlicha de Beidina. Both say if three Dayanim were sitting in session in Beis Din, and they sent the Shaliach Beis Din to summon someone to Din, Va'amar Mipuma Dechot, and the shliach only summoned the litigant in the name of one of the dayanim, lo amar klum. I will say such a summons is ultimately meaningless. Ad amar mishme dekulhu, until the litigant is summoned in the name of all three dayanim. That's the Braisa means when it says that zimun b'shlosha, to summon someone to din, we'll say it must be done in the name of all three dayanim. So the Gemara says, hani mili below yom adidina. Now that's only true if the summons is taking place, we'll say, not on a yom adidina. Yom adidina means the day that Beis Din is sitting in session, which means Mondays and Thursdays, as a result of takana says Rav Abba, yom adidina, but we'll say on a day when Beis Din is already sitting in session, less lanba. You could summon the litigant even in the name of one. See, the Rav says, since Beis Din is in session, it's clear that the summons is taking place on behalf of all three Dayanim. Fine. Tashlumi Kefas. So now the Gemara is going to go back and go through the various cases in the Mishnah. So Tashlumi Kefal. So remember again, the Mishnah said that Kefal cases, right? They will say, so Kefal is a double payment, which represents Knossos, penalty payments, require a Beis Din of three. Shalach le Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisla, Rav Nachman bar Yaakov. So Nachman bar Chisla sends Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, then Din Rabbeinu. So Rabbi teach us, Dine Knossos Bekama. When it comes to Knossos, when it comes to penalty payments, what size Beis Din do you need to adjudicate those kind of cases? So the Gemara says, my kami boyele. So I don't understand, what kind of question is that? Ha nanta, we learned this explicitly, b'shlosha. The Mishnah told us explicitly that Knossos, that penalty payment cases, require a Beis Din of three. Ela yochid mumcha kami boyele. Do'in din Knossos olo. Rather, what the Gemara is asking is the following. What about a yachid mumcha? We learned already that in certain cases, you could have an individual expert serve as the dayan for a Beis Din. Can you have a yachid mumcha, an individual as an expert, adjudicate on knas cases? Amrle tenisua. I said, we learned this. Tashlumi kefal, v'tashlumi arba v'chamisha b'shlosha. Mishnah said that cases of kefal, similarly, arba v'chamisha, the 4 and 5 time penalty payments for stealing and slaughtering animals, ultimately, again, has to be done with a Beis Din of three. My shlosha, what does shlosha mean? Ilei m'shlosha yotos. If you want to say that it's three regular people, ha'amar avu adavuch mishmei derav, be it the father of your father said in the name of Rav, afilu asara v'hinei yotos, psum dinei knossos, even if you have 10 people. But what? They are yotos, they're regular people, in other words, they're not well-versed, not the midi chachamim. It's not going to work. Ela mumchin. Rather, I will say, when it says you should need a basin of three means what? A basin of three mumchin. A basin of three experts. Vika amar shlosha. And what do you see from here? You see that even when you need three mumchin. Which I will say clearly tells us that what? That a yochid mumcha, an individual who is an expert, cannot adjudicate cases of kenasos. And I will say, that is indeed halacha lemaisa. That as much as a yochid mumcha, an individual is an expert, can adjudicate dine mamonis, regular monetary law, when it comes to kenasos, penalty payments, you cannot use a yochid mumcha. In fact, again, you need a basin of three, and you need those three to be shlosha mumchin. You need them to be three experts in and of themselves. Fine. V'chom motzi shem rav esrim v'arba. So also remember again, the chum said that motzi shem rav, right? Remember, motzi shem rav is the case where a man marries a woman and then claims that she was not a besula. So we have a machlokes and the Mishnah, how large a basin for motzi shem rav has to be. The chachamim said 23, and we're going to see the other opinion in the Mishnah. Other opinion in the Mishnah said 3. Three. So the Gemara says the final boss. So the Gemara says like this. Now remember, the reason the Chachamim require 23 is why? Because Motzi Shemra has the ability to turn into a Dine Nefashos case. Why? Because when a man goes in and claims that the woman that he married was not a Besula, it's possible that she had relations with another man after Erusin, after already betrothal took place, in which case she was already a married woman, in which case it would be Znus, in which case it would be a Chi of Misa. So therefore the Chachamim say that every case of Motzi Shemra has to be adjudicated by a basin of 23, as is the halacha for any capital case. So says the Gemara, V'chi Yeshbo Dine Nefashos, my Havi. Gemara says, I don't understand, but the case that the Mishnah is dealing with is not a case of Dine Nefashos. In other words, the case of where the Mishnah is dealing, the case the Gemara is telling us, the case the Mishnah is dealing with is where a man comes along and says that my wife was not a basula. He's not bringing forward any edus that says that she committed any kind of adultery. He is just making a claim. Now, I will say, now, there's one halacha over here that Rashi doesn't bring down today that's exceptionally important. When a man says that lamaisa again, that a woman was not a basula, so I'll say, so the halacha is that husband is believed to make her lose her ksuva. So this is a very important yisod, meaning at the end of the day, even if there's no edus that she committed adultery, he is believed to make her lose her ksuva. Now, how much of the ksuva she loses, we'll discuss. Why is a husband automatically believed when he makes that claim? So we'll say the assumption, as Yefim says in the Gemara's model, who used to pay for a wedding? So the husband used to pay for the wedding. It doesn't even pay for the wedding. So this goes back, by the way, to the motif that's expressed in Masechah Sota, where the Gemara discusses the idea that the normative order of events is that a man gets a parnasa, then builds a home, and then gets married. So as such again, so a husband was often paying for the wedding. So Chazal felt that if a man spent all of this money paying for a wedding, he's not going to lie about his wife being a basula or not being a basula. In other words, he just spent all of this money on this wedding. So as such, again, he's believed. So says the Gemara, we're talking about over here a case where there's only a financial ramification, there's no dine nefashos ramification. So why is there a need for a basin of 23? Amar ula, b'choshishin lalaz kamiflagi. So this is what we'll say. The question is, at the end of the day, when this testimony is given and based in, are we choshesh that maybe as a result of this testimony, what's going to happen? Witnesses may come forward. That's choshishin lalaz. Are we choshesh that maybe once the ball gets rolling, witnesses that she did commit adultery will in fact come out of the woodwork? Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Actually, not yet. I'm sorry. Rabbi Meir Savra in Choshin Laz. Rabbi Meir says we're not Choshesh, and therefore you only need a basin of three. For Rabbanon Savri Choshin Laz. Rabbanon say no. Maybe once the husband makes his statement, witnesses will come out that said she committed adultery, and therefore you need a basin of 23. Rava Amar Rava says no. Kuli Amal Laz Lo Chashinan. We are not concerned that once the husband gives his statement, that witnesses about adultery are going to come out. Rather, the Gemara says, V'hacha b'choshishin l'chvodon shal rishonon kamiflagi. Here the machlokas is, are we choshish for the covet of the original beizdin? We'll say, what does that mean? V'hacha ma'askinon, here's the case. Kigon da'achnif be'esrin utlasla meidin dine nefashos. For example, again, the original beizdin that was convened was a beizdin of 23, because Beis Din thought, the husband claimed that he had edus, that his wife had committed adultery. So they convened the Beis Din of 23. V'ibdor. And what happens? It will say, it turns out that l'maisa, again, the husband never had any proof. And what happens? The Beis Din, therefore, again, split up. V'amr lehu, dainu li miha dinei mamanis. And the husband says, well, look, even though I don't have a claim for dinei nefashas, at least go ahead and convene a Beis Din for dinei mamanis to make her lose to the ksuva. So the Gemara says, the Shaila Rabosei becomes, do we go ahead and therefore reconvene that original 23, or do we go ahead and just reconvene another Beis Din of 3? So the question is it considered to be a slight to the original Beis Din of 23 to convene now a second Beis Din? Are we choshesh to the cover of the Beis Din? Do we say, no, we're not choshesh to the cover of the Beis Din? Just convene another Beis Din of 3. So the Gemara says, Meisvei. And well, actually, before you turn the page, take a look at that Rashi, the last Rashi on the daf. He says, "Va'amar hoil ve'inli edim donuli miyas b'shlosha daini mamonas laf sida ksuva ksuvas aidi atzmo." Both say when he says over here, even if I don't have edim to go ahead and prove that she committed adultery, you could still convene a beis din to go ahead and make her lose her ksuva. Kedekaim alon chachamim tiknu lalim nosi so alubsula masenlo amana mana. So remember again, Chazal instituted that a b'sula should get a ksuva of 200 zuz, an amana or anyone who's not a besula, 100 zuz. The heim ha'eminu lafsida apiv chazaka in adam toreach besuda umafsida. So I say, so when a husband makes a claim that he says that she was not a besula, we believe that claim at least vis-a-vis the ksuva, because you have a chazaka that a husband is not going to work so hard to provide for a wedding meal and then go in and lie about his wife being a besula. It doesn't make any kind of sense. The financial loss that he incurs is quite significant. So the Gemara, so we're going to explore that a little bit more. Rabbi Meir Sarah B'Shlosha, Vin Choshen L'Kavad HaRishonim, V'Dan Nafilu B'Shlosha, V'Rabbanan Sarah V'Choshen L'Kavad HaRishonim, Ubay Kulu. So also, Rabbi Meir holds that we're not Choshish for the Kavad of the original Beis Din, therefore we'll just reconvene a Beis Din of 3 to adjudicate the monetary claim. The Rabbanan say, no, we are Choshish for the Kavad of the original Beis Din, therefore what? We'll use the original 23, who were originally convened for Dinei Nefashos, and we'll use them now for Dinei Mamanis. Fine. I'm a days. May say, somebody is Zakasha. The Mari is Zakasha. Chom the Chom say, Tibo Mamon Bishlosha, Tibo Nefashos Be'esu Mishlosha. So the Chachamim said, I don't understand. If there's a monetary claim, so go ahead and use a Beis Din of 3. If there is a Dinei Nefashos claim, then ultimately adjudicate that with a Beis Din of 23. The Rabbi says, so watch this. So the Gemara says, Bishlama L'Rava, Tavon Mamon Tchila B'Shlosha, Tavon Nefashos Tchila, Afilu Mamon Be'esu M'Shlosha. So according to Rava, this makes sense. Because the way to understand this price would be the following. If originally the claim was just for money, then we would simply convene a Beis Din of 3. If, however, the claim was for what? Was originally for Nefashos, was originally, ultimately, again, regarding a capital claim, then even if it turned out that the Beis Din was not going to adjudicate the capital claim, once Lamaisa what, that Beis Din was already convened, we'll use that same Beis Din of 23 to adjudicate what? The monetary claims. You both say, according to Rava, the fundamental shaila is, if you convene a Beis Din to adjudicate a capital case, and then it turns out there's no capital case, but there's only a monetary claim, do you want to, so remember, for a capital case, how large is your Beis Din? How large? 23. So the shaila is, if you've already convened that 23-person Beis Din, do you have to use that same Beis Din for the monetary claim or not? Rabbi Meir says no, because my he holds in choshishin lichvot bezin. It's not considered a slight to the bezin if you dissolve that 23 bezin person bezin and just go ahead and convene a bezin of 3 for the dini mamonas. The rabbanon say no, there is a slight to the covenant of bezin. So according to Rav said this price makes sense. According to Rav, the price is teaching me that if you originally had a monetary claim, you convene a bezin of 3. If lamaisa again what? If however you convene the bezin for a capital claim, you convene the bezin of 23. Then it turns out that what? There was no capital claim. There's only a financial claim. The Rabbanan, the Chachamim will say, you use that same basin of 23 to adjudicate the monetary claim. Why? Because Choshishin l'chvod Beis Din. Ela l'ula kasha. Rabbi says, according to Ula, this braisa poses a question. So Amar Rava. So the Gemara says, take a look at Rashi. Ela l'ula, it's the first and second short lines. Ela l'ula, the Amar Rabbanan l'laz chayshi. So we'll say, according to Ula, the Rabbanan and Choshesh show the following, that once a man makes a monetary claim, by virtue of the fact that he's claiming that his wife is not a besula, we are choshish for the possibility that what may happen, once this is in Beis Din, that witnesses may come forward who know that she committed adultery. So according to that, Shema Yishmu, I'm reading Rashi, Shema Yishmu u Eidim v'yavo, tibo mamon b'shlosha, hechi mishkachas lo, li'olam esim mishlosha l'rabbanan, but you know, mishun l'choshin las, you must, according to Ula, the Rabbanan, in any case of Motsi Shemra, should always require what? Should always require 23. Why? Because according to Ula's version of the Rabbanan, any Motsi Shemra case can very easily become a Dine Nefashas case, even if the husband's claim is only for Mamon. Because Choshishin Lalas, Choshishin Lalas means that once you have a Motsi Shemra case in Beis Din, we're concerned about the possibility that Eidim will hear about this going, people will hear about this, and Eidim will come forward that she committed adultery, in which case what began as a monetary claim morphs into a capital case. Therefore, you have to be armed with the right kind of Beis Din to adjudicate that case. If that's the case, then according to the Chachamim, according to Ula's version of the Chachamim, you should always require a Beis Din of 23 for every Motzi Shemra case. So the Gemara Amar Rava, Rava said, Ani v'arisha v'chabura, me and the lion of the Chabura, Targamina. We explain in the following, by the way, who is the Arisha v'chabura, Umanu, Rav Chiya bar Avin. So Rav Chiya bar Avin, we'll say, what's the case? How come I ask Kinan? How do we interpret this case? Shehevi habal idim shazinsa. So watch this. This is the cases with the following. The husband brought witnesses that indeed the wife had committed adultery. Vehevi ha'ab edin vezimum le'edi habal. And what happened? The father of the girl, the father of the wife, right, came along, brought witnesses, and did hazama on the witnesses of the husband. So also remember again, we'll get to Makkos in Yeretz Hashem, but remember edim zomamin. Edim zomamin means two witnesses come forward and give testimony. Witnesses one and two give testimony. Then what happens? Witnesses three and four come along and say, you cannot have possibly given that, know that information. Why? Because Imanu Hayisem, you're with us. So the case of Rabosa is where the husband went ahead and brought forward witnesses who said the wife committed adultery. The father then came along and what? And went ahead and brought witnesses who were mazim, ultimately who went ahead and did hazama on the witnesses of the husband. Bal ligvos mamon mi bal b'shlosha. So also listen to this. Now remember, the Torah says that if it turns out that a husband is motzi shemra on his wife, claiming that she was not a basula, and then it turns out that's what? That the husband was lying, so the husband has to pay 100 shekel, 100 mana to the father of his wife, to his father-in-law. So the Gemara says like this. So we'll say you have now Rava and Rabbi Chiya bar Avin saying the case of Raisa means this, the Bryce is talking about a case where the father is coming to collect the money from the husband, Bishlosha. And we'll say that could be done through a Beis Din of 3, because that's a clear what? That's a clear case of Dine Mamanis. There's no possibility of Nefashas in that case. But indeed, if there was a capital, potential capital case, then the Maisa that would be adjudicated through a case of 23. Fine. Abaye says no. Everyone agrees that what? That whenever you have a Motzi Shemra case, we have to be concerned with the possibility that what Rabbi was saying, that it's going to quickly descend into a capital case, even if what? Even if the original claim of the husband is only for money. We'll say, so in other words, what Abai is saying is, everyone agrees, if you say Choshishin Lelaz, Rabbi was saying, then what size Beis Din do you need for every single Motzi Shemra case? 23, right? Because remember, Choshishin Lelaz means that even if the husband's claim is that I don't owe my wife a ksuva because she wasn't a basula, and I'm not claiming any dina nefashas, but Choshishin Lelaz means that once this gets rolling in Beis Din, we are choshish with the possibility that Edom will hear about this, come forward with information that she committed adultery. Therefore, every single Beis Din for Motzi Shemra has to be equipped to deal with a possible capital case. Therefore, it needs to be 23. Umishum kvodin sharishonim. And we are ultimately again choshish for the covet of the Beis Din as well. Hachamayaskinon. So what's the case here? So how do we understand the Braisa? Kigon da'asru ba'stam. Oh, I both said the case over here is where the witnesses claim that the woman received hasra. So we've witnessed that she committed adultery. And she received hasra, but she received what's called hasra stam. We'll say, typical, or I should say, paradigmatic hasra, is witnesses see a particular individual about to commit navera. So what does hasra mean? That in order to be chayiv, any type of misa in Beis Din, you have to be warned. You have to be warned. Now, under normal circumstances, what is that warning comprised of? That warning is comprised of the act that you are about to do is prohibited, and the punishment is X. Punishment is X, meaning the punishment that you are to receive for that act is explicitly articulated. In this case over here, the witness has told the woman, you know, adultery is usur, and the punishment for adultery is death. But they didn't tell her which type of misas Beis Din. The high tanahu, and Abba said, this price reflects the following tanah. This sanya, usha'ar kol chai b'miso shebatorah, eim misin osam, ela be'ida ve'idin v'asra. So we'll say, when it comes to chai b'miso shebatorah, when it comes to situations where individuals ultimately, again, are chayiv misa, so ultimately, again, there are misin osa ela be'eda. So Rashi defines over here eda as chav gimel. So chav gimel means that a death sentence could only be handed down through a basin of 23 ve'edim and witnesses v'hasra, and of course you require ultimately again hasra as well. Va'ad shiyodi uhu shehu chayiv misa bebezdin. And ultimately, again, you have to tell the person, meaning the violator, that they're going to be chayiv misa bebezdin. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ad shiyodi uhu be'eza misa hu narag. And Rabbi Yehuda says, not only do you have to tell them what they're about to say, not only do you have to tell them that they're going to be executed by what, you have to tell the person which type of misa they're going to be chayiv. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara says, according to the Rabbanon will hold that a hasra koldu, right? Any type of hasra is going to be enough. Whereas Rabbi Meir holds, ultimately again, like Rabbi Yehuda, that you require ultimately again a specific hasra. Therefore, if the case is where the woman did not receive a specific hasra, therefore according to Rabbi Meir, all you need is a basin of what? Of three. Because since women never received a specific hasra, therefore, Tabosai, there's no chiyuv misa. If there's no chiyuv misa, the most that there could be, the most that the husband could sue for is what? Mammon. Mammon only requires a basin of three. According to the Rabbanon, they hold that even non-specific hasra ultimately is enough to cause a death penalty. Therefore, in this case, you have to convene a basin of 23. So we'll just do one more line and we'll stop. Rapapa Amar Hacha. Excuse me. Rapapa Amar Hacha Beisha Chaveira Askinim. Rapapa, what are we dealing with over here? I'm dealing with a woman who is a Talmud Chacham, Chavera, a Talmud Chacham, Kamiflagi, but put it Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbanon, the Sanyo, Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda Omer, Chaver in Tzarech Hasra. Rabbi Yossi Yehuda says that a Chaver will say Talmud Chacham does not require Hasra. Why does a Talmud Chacham not require Hasra? V'fishalo nitna Hasra ela lahavchin bein shogeg umezit. Ultimately, again, because it will say Hasra was, why does Halacha require Hasra? Only to make sure that someone is not a shogeg. Where when you get hasra, it's good that you know exactly what you're doing. So therefore, again, I will say, ultimately, Rabbi Yehuda holds, or Rabbi Yosef Yehuda holds, that a chaver, someone who is a Talmud Chacham, does not require, or someone who is well-versed in halacha, does not require hasra. Therefore, I will say, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says over here, that, the Rabbanon will hold of Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda, and if we're dealing with the Isha Chavera, and she knows the halachas, we know she knows the halachas, therefore, even if she does not receive hasra, she could be chayiv for adultery. Therefore, again, you'll have to use a basin of 23, whereas Rabbi Meir holds, then no, everyone requires a hasra, even someone who's a Talmud Chacham, and therefore, in a case where there's no hasra, there's no misa, at most you have a din of mamon, and therefore what? At most you require a Beis Din of three. So we'll stop over here for today. We're leaving off in the midst of this machlok kesuot and Amir and the Chachamim. Namely, again, we have Chacham telling me that for Moshe Shemra, I need a Beis Din of 23. We have Rabbanan telling me I need a Beis Din of 23. I have Rabbi Meir telling me I need a Beis Din of three. And we're trying to figure out what exactly is at the root of their machlokas to be continued tomorrow.